our friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
You're so astute. You know that, Evan?
I'll take that as a compliment because I don't know what that word means, but thank you.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
I was going to have a conversation with you whether Nacho Butt was better or worse than Cake Eater from the Mighty Ducks.
Oh, Cake Eater is definitely the worst.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Daydream about me a lot, Evan. I'm just curious. I know it's totally off.
Okay, well, now that you're trying to make me look like an ass, I was debating on calling you Nacho Butt.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome into the Friends with Fantasy Benefits baseball podcast. I am your host, Ben Brennan. I'm joined by Evan Peterson. How are you doing tonight, Evan?
I'm doing just swell, Ben. The weather is fantastic here in the Midwest, and there's still baseball on the TV. It wasn't a dream, so I'm fantastic.
Well, that's good. Did you think baseball was going to go away over the last week or so?
No, but
the season's not that short.
Oh, believe me, I know that much, but it's just one of those things where I'm just really happy to have it back, and yeah, thanks.
All right, well, I'm glad to hear that. We're also joined by Chuck Anderson. How are you doing tonight, Chuck?
I am doing well. I think we're getting to the point where you can just call it the regular gang at this point, don't you think?
Well, I could, but for our new listeners that join us, they don't know who you are, so I have to announce you just so that they can find out who you are so that they can message us all on Twitter.
Okay, we can do it that way. Otherwise, maybe next time we'll just all announce who we are before we say anything, and then we could do it from there. But anyway, I get what you're getting at.
If that's what you want to do, Chuck, we can try it that way next week.
All right, we'll keep going at Jersey style, whatever you want there, Ben. We're on it.
Chuck, why don't you tell our listeners where they can reach you on Twitter?
My Twitter handle is @justchuckingit, and I answer all kinds of questions and do a lot of interaction on Twitter and post a lot, usually ranting and raving against the Dodgers or the A's or the Rockies and such. Usually it's pretty ranty, so it's kind of interesting, I think.
And what about you, Evan?
Well, I actually just made the big shift in the Twitter handle, so now you can find me at EvFWFB, that's EVFWFB, spouting out all kinds of nonsense. Don't try and follow my train of thought. It's a dark rabbit hole, folks.
And I am at BBrandisFWFB. Guys, why don't we just jump right in, and why don't we talk a little bit about the catcher position? What were your draft strategies going into any drafts that you had this season, and what would you say is your impression after the first week of what the catcher position overall is looking like at this current time? Why don't we start with you, Chuck?
Well, I was pretty vocal on Twitter about the fact that I ended up punting catcher in almost all of my leagues. It's like I fell in just the wrong spot. I couldn't get any of the – I have one share of Wilson Contreras, and other than that, I punted catcher in my other four leagues, and I just didn't feel like I could pull the trigger value-wise in comparing, Gary Sanchez to other players I would have had to take, like, a Nelson Cruz or someone like that. Nelson Cruz had his first, good game of the season today, so I guess that's not a great analogy, but still, I just felt like there was more overall value and that the other players that I could take there were going to play closer to 6.5 games a week instead of 5.5 games a week, which the average catcher certainly, certainly doesn't play more than 6 games ever. So that was a lot of what went into my thought. And to be honest with you, I feel really good about punting catcher right now. The low end catchers that I liked, the Sandy Leon and the James McCann already has 2 home runs. Sandy Leon is the 4th best catcher on the player radar after 1 week. I feel pretty good. I have, I even have a share of Jet Bandy, who hasn't been too bad considering his draft position. And he's way ahead on the player radar of guys like Yasmani Grandal, Evan Gaddis, Mr. Lucroy, former Brewer, Mr. Lucroy. So right now I feel like I made the right decision. And that's even before I know the severity of the Buster Posey injury that happened earlier today. So I took punt catcher and I feel pretty good about it right now. Obviously it would have been better if I had Real Muto or Salvador Perez, but I didn't like Perez because of all the durability issues that come from him playing so much in recent years. And Real Muto was somebody that I got talked off of by listening to various podcasts and various outlets where people were worried about him being sort of just batting average oriented. So, but so far, if you don't have Real Muto or Sal Perez, I think punting looks like it was the right thing to do.
What about you, Evan?
Well, yeah, I took a kind of wait and see approach as well. I would say Lucroy is probably the only like top four catcher that I really ended up with, and I only ended up with him in one spot, other than a dynasty league where I'm figuring out this mess with Yan Gomes and Devin Mesoraco, which is making me sad just talking about it. I have double shares of Brian McCann, Yasmani Grandal, and Francisco Cervelli. Those are in OBP leagues, if you didn't figure that out. And Evan Gattis, who actually, I think he's got like five walks already this season. So another guy that's surprising me in an OBP league. But it's just the random variance of the first week. And with catchers who are taking, you know, a day off, not that, you know, there aren't guys that are, you know, getting some time off here early going. It's just one of those things that I'm not really worried about. But I do agree that if you paid up, not that you can predict like Gary Sanchez injuries, or we'll wait and see what happens to Posey. But I think paying up at catcher is kind of a mistake, and it's kind of been proven time and time again.
Yeah, for me, I don't have a lot of leagues that weren't already done in a bunch of dynasty leagues already. But for the two leagues that I did have to do an actual draft for, I was targeting Real Muto in those leagues just because I did like his upside. I like the stolen base prowess that he has, and I still think he's able to hit close to 15 home runs for the entire season. So I thought that I'd get a good balance out of catcher, and he was falling a bunch on draft boards. But I do agree that I'm the type of person that typically doesn't go for an early type of catcher. I'm not the person who's going to jump at Gary Sanchez, a Jonathan Lucroy, a Buster Posey, regardless of if they're falling around or two, because I just don't peg the value at the catcher more than what someone else may, and that's why I'm never willing to pay the same price. So for me, it's good to wait, because I do like some of the back-end players more. I do like the Yadier Molina type. I don't always need a ton of power. I just need someone who's not a total dark hole at the position. And I think that's where the benefit of sometimes being a little patient is a benefit, because there are some catchers like that that aren't total dark holes that are available at the back end of a top 10. Just depends on how deep your league is. Did you guys have anything else to add on catchers at all?
No, I just thought it was something we could touch base on, and we can touch base going forward, and maybe next week we'll pick a different position, and we'll sort of talk about our strategies and how they feel so far. I think it's a good idea.
Yeah, definitely want to see what happens with this Posey injury. He did say after the game he feels fine, but they're going to reevaluate him in a day's time. So we will see what happens. If Posey does go down, is Nick Hundley a player that you guys are looking to target at all? Or is he just someone who is just going to be a pure fill-in, and there's no level that can replace Posey, basically? Why don't we start with you, Evan?
Well, I mean, I don't think Nick Hundley's going to come in and replace Buster Posey. But I do not really buy into it. And I haven't really looked at the ownership percentage of a lot of catchers. But I imagine in a lot of, you know, just basic leagues, like Cervelli might be out there. Or maybe somebody, maybe not Wellington Castillo, I was kind of thinking. But I think there's better names. Throw some names at me. Anybody?
Bandy? You rather have Jet Bandy?
Yeah, I'd probably take Bandy.
How about James McCann? Would you rather have James McCann?
Yes.
How about Derek Norris?
I mean, that's a line for me, but that's because I have a lot of scars from last year and I know not to carry that baggage, but I'd have to see it a little more from Norris.
Tucker Barnhart?
No, like I said, I'm worried about this Mesoraco injury. I don't know at all.
Travis Darno.
I hate Travis Darno. He's always hurt. Once again, bias. He's a Met. Fuck him.
Well, extending the start of the conversation, I think Hundley not having much value last year when he was in Colorado. Granted, he had some injuries. He was good when he was in Colorado, but he wasn't very good overall when he was in Baltimore. So now he goes to San Francisco, which is actually the hitter's park that I fear the most because of Triples Alley, et cetera, especially for a limited action type of player. So I would not be very excited about Hundley. I would only use Hundley in the deepest of leagues where at-bats is currency.
What about Evan? Who would you rather, Tyler Flowers or Nick Hundley?
Yuck. It's really bad because Tyler Flowers is a terrible, other than a pitch framer, he's a terrible, terrible player.
You're saying 357 on the year?
Small sample sizes. It's 14
at-bats.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a huge sample size. I might go Hundley in that situation.
Fair enough. All right, why don't we move into our next topic? And we're going to be talking about some fringy players at best that are having some hot starts, and we're going to be looking as to if they are players that are worth picking up or if they're worth letting kind of fall by the wayside and they'll regress to the mean. Why don't we start with you, Evan?
All right, well, I guess I kind of have two player debates, so we'll shelve those for a minute. And I want to talk about Chris Devinsky, who I have in a few deep spots. And he's made me question my approach to relief pitching. And I was sitting around contemplating, would I rather have a guy who could potentially be in line for the closer job, but has no shot at a starting gig whatsoever? Or a reliever that nobody really believes as a ninth inning arm, but could crack the rotation in a pinch if need be and not be horrendous, be, you know, slightly better than league average. So, like, looking at, would I rather have a Luke Gregerson or Devinsky on my team, or to use Ben's Mets, a guy like Addison Reed versus like a Rafael Montero? Because they could throw the same number of innings in a week if you're talking head to head or in a weekly start roto league setting. And I know Chuck is probably going to come on and explain how long relief is a different animal based on game situation and how often you'll be able to go. And that's why I love chatting with him. But like Devinsky threw 8 innings this week. He struck out 14 guys. If he stays in the pen, I don't know how many weeks he's topping that, but he could, you know, provide the same stats as Gregerson over that time. He was great in 5 starts last year. He's stretched out. And there's enough haziness at the back end of this rotation with, like, Mike Fiers, Colin McHugh's injury, Joe Musgrove's inexperience, that he could get a crack at it. So I don't know if you guys have any thoughts about Devinsky or the back end of the Astros rotation in general. My theories, life, you know, anything.
What about you, Chuck? What do you have to say about this?
Well, I would say that I only really like using a middle reliever strategy when you hook into somebody who's exceptionally hot and in a very good situation. And it seems like Devinsky is that guy. Like last year's pitcher was Darren O'Day, was the guy who, you know, was used for multiple innings and was in the perfect spot with a rotation in front of him that offered a lot of win opportunities, a lot of lengthy relief situations. So I liked Chris Devinsky as a topic for tonight because I think there's a lot of situations where Devinsky makes a lot of sense. Any daily transaction leagues, he makes a very large amount of sense. And any situations where, you know, you don't per se have an innings pitched category, like a head-to-head categories league or something like that, where it seems like he makes a lot of sense in most situations, like 75% of the situations, I like a Chris Devinsky ad right now. I think you have to have some roster flexibility to do it, though. Like, I'm in so much trouble because I have 40% of my teams had Sam Dyson on them. They don't all have him on there anymore. And I also, you know, I had an early scare with Melanson. He, you know, got his second save today. So if you have only so many middle relief slots or so many pitcher slots and you're hunting saves, it can be a lot harder to do. If you're comfortable in saves, if you fell into Greg Holland or someone like that who's off to a hot start, even Brandon Kinsler, who I guess I wouldn't feel very secure in long term, but at the same time, you've got enough saves to get by and you can sort of play the wire later on if you need to, then I think Chris Devensky makes a lot of sense. And I think Evan is very astute to point him out to me and our listeners.
You're so astute. You know that, Evan?
I'll take that as a compliment because I don't know what that word means, but thank you. I'm totally kidding, by the way. I'm a very smart man. I appreciate the compliment.
I'm a big fan of Devensky. I liked him last year, and that's because a lot of the teams that are deeper leagues that I play in, they typically have basically just pitcher spots. They don't have starting pitcher and relief pitchers, just pitcher spots. So it allows me to kind of stream relievers, whether they're actual closers or setup men or people who just get a lot of Ks and have decent ratios. So Devinsky's the type of player that I like. He averaged nearly 2 innings per relief appearance last year. He threw 3 innings on 10 different occasions last year. So you know that he's able to go multiple innings. You know that he's going to get strikeouts. And he's not a total distraction, or he's not a total loss in ratios or in strikeouts or anything of that nature, and in the ERA. So it's nice to have him actually doing a good job to start off the season. It's nice that in the 8 innings he has the 14 Ks, he has given up only 4 base runners, basically. And he's only given up 1 earned run in those 8 innings. So it will be good to see how much he's continued to be used. But you know that Houston's going to use him a lot, and they're going to use him as a bridge. They're going to use him when they need to go to a guy who they know can shut it down. He's the type of player that you want in the bullpen. He's kind of like a Michael Lorenzen who's in the Cincinnati bullpen, who is able to do a good job for multiple innings, or an Andrew Miller who's able to come in and do well for multiple innings. Obviously, they're all different levels, but those are guys that you want to kind of look at if you need someone who's going to be able to pick up a few innings, have decent ratios, and get a bunch of strikeouts.
Yeah, he threw 60 pitches in each of his outings. The Kansas City game was one that went into extra innings, and he was brought on. The only run was a solo shot home run, 1 walk over 8 innings. So, yeah, I mean, obviously I like Devinsky because I brought him up, but I'm glad you guys are on board as well.
All right, Chuck, why don't you bring up one of your candidates?
Well, with so many injuries coming down in recent days in the middle infield, I thought I should look towards the middle infielders. And I have one very deep and one not so deep person on my list. So I'll start with the middle infielder on my list, who also happens to be outfield eligible. And that's one Howie Kendrick. I'll be the first person to admit I was pretty skeptical about both playing time and role that he might have with the Phillies. Last year, he had 10 stolen bases and 8 home runs, and he played in a lot of games, upwards of 130 last year. He's 33 years old. Well, he starts out this year 9 for his first 21 with a stolen base already. He's eligible at second base and in the outfield. He's gotten 5 starts in left field. He's only had 1 game where he's completely sat out and not at least pinch hit. So I think Howie Kendrick, as a fill-in and maybe someone with some versatility if it keeps working out like it is now as far as second base and outfield eligibility, I think Howie Kendrick is kind of interesting. I also want to note that he's never really played in a full-blown hitter's park before, because his time in Anaheim was certainly not hitter-friendly, and we know that Dodger Stadium is not a hitter haven either. So now all of a sudden he moves to the Phillies home park, which is definitely much more friendly, known as a bandbox, the easiest park to hit in the NL East. So if you're in trouble, I'm okay with Howie Kendrick as a pickup, as 9 for his first 21. So like I said, he's somebody I think you can use to help, span the gap here, you know, and get you to when you get some of your players back around the infield. How do you guys feel about Howie Kendrick as a deep league play?
I personally like Kendrick. I think that he's a good player and he's someone that you can target. I'm not entirely sure if he's going. I mean, obviously, I don't think he's going to keep up the stats that he's been putting up in a big majority of his, basically all of his counting stats, except for one RBI, basically, and the run that he's got tonight. We're all in one game, and that was the game that they won 17-3 over Washington on Saturday night. He went 3 for 5. He had 2 runs, 4 RBIs, and a stolen base. So, yeah, I don't expect him to keep that type of pace up with counting stats, but I think he's a good fill-in if you do have injuries. If you have someone like a J.D. Martinez who you picked up knowing that he was going to be out, and then your extra outfielder ended up getting hurt, or you have someone like Jackie Bradley Jr. who is now out on the DL, or Mookie Betts who had the flu earlier this week, there's going to be players that just weren't able to play for whatever reason, whether they were playing bad, whether they were hurt, like Steven. Oh, look at Piscotty. People didn't expect that to happen to Piscotty. He gets hit 3 times in 1 inning with the ball. Like, seriously? So, Hallie Kendrick is a good fill-in, and I do like it. I just don't know how much you can totally count on him, but any chance that you get with him that he does give you a good stat night, you're basically getting extra help, and that's very nice. What about you, Evan?
I'm just kind of disgusted by Howie Kendrick. I mean, he hit a career-worst 264 against right-handed pitching last year. He hit a career-low 234 against left-handed pitching last year. I'm just not too excited. I'm not really excited about what's going on around him in Philadelphia, unless you're talking about the bullpen, which gets me a little excited. But Howie Kendrick just doesn't really move the needle for me, and are you looking to put him in an outfield spot or a middle infield spot? Because I think there's much better plays than Kendrick. Like the Angels guys that we're going to talk here in a little bit, or in the outfield, you can find a guy that does what Howie Kendrick does.
Angels in the outfield?
Well, that's a fantastic movie. And, yeah, I mean, it could happen, but I don't know.
Well, it's curious because the Phillies are in a spot, too, where I think if Kendrick got off to a decent start, that they may look to keep giving him a decent amount of at-bats in the idea that they could flip him at the trade deadline because he's a veteran who does have experience in the postseason, etc. So I'm not as low on him as Evan is. I think teams like this in rebuild mode, they need that one veteran guy, both for the clubhouse and both in the lineup that they know they're going to get a professional at-bat from. And so I do realize that Kendrick did struggle last year, and that's what landed him on this team. But I have a little more hope for a renaissance than Evan Peterson does by a long shot from what I'm hearing.
The one question is they have other players on that team that are veterans that they could easily move at the deadline. You know, I wouldn't be totally surprised if at the deadline, if Jemar Gomez is having a decent season, if they move him, same with Michael Saunders, same with Hallie Kendrick. You know, there's players on the team that they could end up moving, but at some point, you're going to have to try to get some of the young guys some at-bats. And I don't know if the Phillies are really looking to have someone like Aaron Altair get stopped by a Howie Kendrick presence, or have someone. I don't expect, if Nick Williams is having a good season in the minors, that he's going to get blocked by a Howie Kendrick. So, yes, I do think that Hallie Kendrick could have a good season, and they could look to keep playing him because they may want to flip him. But I feel that it's also based on how some of their younger players are doing, because I really don't see Hallie Kendrick being a roadblock for the younger players because of service time or anything, because the Phillies are an improving team. They have an improving pitching staff. They have some good offensive players. I don't see if they have good players like Nick Williams or if Aaron Altair is playing better. I don't see either of them being stopped by Hallie Kendrick, regardless of his performance.
That could very well be, but remember that those guys will also, Nick Williams, etc., is the kind of guy that they're not going to want to start his clock too soon either, and a lot can happen before then. And, middle infielders would have to stay healthy as well to completely block Kendrick from having value. So I knew it was a deep reach play, but it's somebody that I wanted to point out that not everyone would realize is off to a hot start. and somebody you could use as a 2 or 3 week fill-in, keep an eye on his role and see if it continues to sustain itself.
Yeah, I mean, I like Hallie Kendrick. Evan clearly doesn't, but I see the value in him. I'm just wondering if, to combat your point, basically, of stating that if he gets off to a hot start that they may keep him in, I feel at the same point in time they could easily have no issue starting someone like Nick Williams-Clark when they do have other outfielders in the minors that could easily come and play, and they would have no issues with them playing. You know, like if Roman Quinn comes back and is actually able to play, they would have no problem starting his clock. Same, I feel they have the same with Nick Williams. Aaron Altair is there, but that's more based on how Saunders plays. But, you know, they still have other players, and they're still going to have early picks over the next few years because they're still going to be one of the lesser good teams in the MLB. But I do agree that he is a good deep league pick and a fringe player to keep an eye on. One of the players that I was going to bring up was Steven Souza Jr. Last year, our owners were looking to have Souza maybe potentially break out. He didn't have that great of a season last year, unfortunately. But this year, he's got off to a good start. He's 10 for 24. He's got a home run, 6 RBIs. So he's got a 417 average, but what he's really worked on, and we'll see if this continues, is he's only struck out once to this point. And if he's able to continue to play well as a result and make good contact, he's the type of player that I feel has a good power-speed combo. And he's actually able to perform well enough that he's going to be able to get potentially on some middle-sized league rosters if being the starting lineup, if he's actually able to cut down on the Ks, have a good average, and still use that power speed. What do you guys think of this?
I really don't have a ton to say about Steven Souza, so I was hoping Chuck would hop in because I don't know, the strikeout issues are there, although I've kind of been wondering how much, like, strikeout issues and contact issues and swing and miss and all this stuff, it matters. But I mean, if you look at the bottoms of these leaderboards, like guys like, you know, Chris Davis and, you know, even Chris Bryant, you know, they have contact issues, but still, you know, pop 45 home runs and are fantastic in other categories. So I'm kind of having an issue wrapping my brain around that. But as far as Steven Souza, I just don't believe in this guy. I'm sorry. I just don't see it. I think he's gotten a lot of pump from other outlets that have been backing him, but I just personally don't get it.
Is it? Do you not like him because of the hype that he had from
That has
Will Myers, or is it because of the injuries, or do you just think that he's like a quad A player, or is it kind of a mixture of everything?
It's probably the 34% strikeout rate. I'd have to think about it. It's a 34% strikeout rate. Even though, I mean, he's got massive pop. He's hit, you know, over 15 home runs in, you know, not a full share of at-bats the past 2 years in Tampa. I don't know. I don't like him. Sorry.
It's all right.
I don't have better statistics than the fact that I just don't like him.
I don't hate you for that. I hate you a little bit, but not that much.
I was going to say, there's other reasons, but okay.
Exactly. What about you, Chuck? What are your thoughts on Steven Souza?
Well, if you wanted to know more about Steven Souza than you need to know, I'm the right guy to talk to. I studied him extensively on during last year's draft season. He's a guy who was he's an older prospect because he got in all kinds of trouble, legal issues, arguments with his managers, et cetera, at the minor league level. And all of a sudden, he is a reborn Christian, and he's also a guy who just decided that he was going to right the ship and realized that his professional baseball career was sinking because of his lifestyle issues when he was a minor league player. So he turned it around. He was a much older prospect. He had a huge year the year before he got traded for, in the Will Myers three-way deal that landed him as Will Myers' replacement in Tampa. I was very, very high on him last year and very disappointed with how poorly that he played. He's also has a number of nagging injuries that he fought last year during the season, which was disappointing as well. Then you look at Tampa. They brought in Colby Rasmus, who still hasn't played. By the way, they brought in Colby Rasmus. They certainly looked to bolster that outfield. They had Nick Franklin, who ended up on the waiver wire and is now a Brewer. But they brought in a lot of outfield help.
They brought in Malik Smith.
That was the name I was waiting for. Yeah,
and so they were doing a number of things to pressure or put up competition to Souza. I can say, as somebody who's watched a ton of Rays games already this year, that he looks very, very focused, and it does not look like he's taking the similar approach at the plate that he was last year. Last year was more of a selling out for power approach. This year he's going line to line and spraying the ball all over the field. If Steven Souza was available in one of the leagues that I play in, I would be all about picking him up. I think that he's at that point again where he realizes that his approach last year had him on the verge of not existing as a major league player, and I do not think last year was representative of his true abilities. So I am I'm a 180 degrees opposite of one Evan Peterson on Steven Souza. I liked Kevin Kiermaier as a breakout outfielder this year with the Rays. I'm not been very excited about what I've seen from him, despite the fact that his overall numbers don't look too bad. And I was not counting on Souza to bounce back, and Souza looks great to me. So I'm in Ben's corner.
That's an interesting one, Kiermaier versus Souza, I think. Real quick, just because you mentioned the approach at the plate, and I realize we're looking at a week's worth of at-bats, but if you wanted to take a look at his plate discipline numbers over at Fangraphs, he's making contact on 87.5% of the balls that he swings at outside of the strike zone. Now he's only swinging at 24% of them compared to a career 29%. But like I said, keep in mind these numbers are subject to change because they are extremely small numbers. It's just something to keep an eye on for sure.
Well, thank you, Chuck. I appreciate you having my back. Evan, I still hate you.
Yeah, and fuck you for all of your information.
Basically.
My turn, right?
Evan, why don't we take a quick break, and we're just going to have a quick message from our sponsor. On Draft, it's draft day every day. Draft is a simple daily fantasy app where you can do snake drafts just like the ones you do at the beginning of your season-long league. They last for just one night, and they take only minutes to complete. On Draft, you can play for free, or better yet, play for money. Get this, your chances of winning on Draft are almost three times better than your chances of winning on any other site. If you're playing fantasy for money and not spending hours a day doing it, you should absolutely be playing on Draft. Download Draft now. Just search Draft in the App Store and it will come up first. Be sure to enter the promo code FWFB when you download, and you will get a 100% bonus up to $600 when you deposit. Again, search Draft in the App Store and be sure to enter the promo code FWFB. All right, Evan, why don't you take us onto your next player and we can go from there.
Awesome. Thank you. All right. Well, I'm not going to go the Angels in the outfield route that I was daydreaming about while you were doing that read. But I do want to talk about...
You daydream about me a lot, Evan. I'm just curious. I know it's totally off.
Okay, well, now that you're trying to make me look like an ass, I was debating on calling you Nacho Butt, like from Angels in the Outfield when he sits down in the nachos.
Oh my God. No, you are not going to call me that.
I was, and then I was going to have a conversation. Hang on. It gets better. I was going to have a conversation with you whether Nacho Butt was better or worse than Cake Eater from the Mighty Ducks.
Oh, Cake Eater is definitely the worst.
Cake Eater is the best. What are you talking
about? If you called me Cake Eater, oh my God, I'd be hurt.
Oh, okay.
That's like the worst insult.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
It's the worst insult out there, I think.
I know neither one of these references, even though I've seen both the movies. But
get
it's
out,
been a long
get
time.
Get out of this podcast, Chuck. What are you doing?
I'm old. I don't have memories like you guys,
Chuck,
I guess.
You go. I'm giving you a homework assignment. You go watch those movies tonight, and you come back to us with the quotes and the scene where they came from, and then we'll watch you on next week's podcast.
I'm right. not I'm not going to give you homework, but I'll say I kill a lot of brain cells, and I remember that. And maybe that's not a good thing. But regardless, we're not here to talk about those things. I should have left them inside my head like most other thoughts. But I do want to talk about Yunel Escobar and Andrelton Simmons, a couple Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. And we'll start with Andrelton Simmons because he's the one that I love the most. And, you know, the defense, I was posting things about just hating Eric Ibar for no reason, watching Andrelton making insane plays in the field. I love Andrelton. I miss him in Atlanta. Come home. He's going to get you ABs in deep league as currency. And you just want him to not kill you as a late round guy. And one way he could not kill you is by replicating some semblance of the growth that he showed against lefties last year. Prior to the beginning of last season against Southpaws, he struck out almost 8% of the time, hitting 240 with a 671 OPS. Last year, he shrunk the strikeout percentage down to just over 5%, hit 292 and had a 745 OPS. And I don't think we're going to see anything close to the 2013 where he hit 17 home runs, putting, you know, 39% of balls into the air. But he could hit double-digit home runs. He could get double-digit steals. He's not going to have the batting average that douchebag Yunel Escobar is going to have. And he was hitting fifth over the weekend, up from the seventh spot where he was slotted to begin the year. So there may be an increase in the counting stats if that continues. Do you guys want to stop here and dissect Simmons, or do you want to, you know, hear my Yunel Escobar thoughts and we can go forward?
Why don't you give us your case for Escobar as well, and then we'll make our decision.
Fantastic. He's an asshole. And, you know, there's tons of record on how much of a bonehead he actually is. But he's not a huge counting number accumulator. He doesn't steal bases. But of the qualified names above him on the batting average leaderboard since the beginning of 2015, you have Altuve, Miguel Cabrera, DJ LeMahieu, Daniel Murphy, and Joey Votto. And that's it. Now, why is that? He doesn't strike out a ton. He's tied for the 17th lowest with Ben Zobrist over that span. His BABIP's insanely high. It's 345, which is 16th best in the majors. And that's crazy considering his hard rate is in the bottom 25 of the majors. And that's a factor that's typically linked to BABIP, but not the only one. He's not crazy good on getting batting average on grounders, so it's hard to pinpoint what caused that BABIP surge. But I think he's interesting because he won't tank your ratios, and, you know, variance of run and RBI numbers, I think, is a pretty good bet for him. I want to hear what Ben has to say, and do the Angels, the arm waving the whole time while you're doing it.
I mean, you guys can't actually see what I'm doing, but I'm totally doing the arm wave.
All right, here we go. Andrelton Simmons, go.
I have no issues with Andrelton Simmons. I mean, he's a fine player. I really liked him a couple years ago. I was really high on him. He's actually doing now kind of what I expected him to do a couple years ago when he was in Atlanta. And it would be nice to see his bat come around, because I think that if he is able to develop some of those counting stats, maybe chip in some steals and have a nice average, I think he's actually a good overall player, and he's able to contribute in all the categories to some degree, and that's nice from a middle infield position, because you don't typically always get that. And it's kind of like you said, it'd be nice if he could improve his batting average against the left-handers, but, you know, at this point, I'll kind of take what I can get with him, and I'm not going to complain. It just would be nice to see him put it together for a longer period of time. What about you, Chuck?
Well, of the two players, I certainly like Andrelton Simmons the most. He's the seventh-rated shortstop on the player radar right now. He's hit safely in seven straight games. I think the fact that he's 27 years old and quite a bit younger than Yunel Escobar, that he did once show some power. He had 17 home runs in 2013. Last year, he had 281, so he didn't hurt you real bad in batting average. He had 10 stolen bases, which matters in this day and age. Last year, but he only had four home runs. His OBP has climbed each of the last 3 years, albeit to only 324. So obviously there's some plate discipline issues. But I think 27 is still young enough where he has some upside. And I think, you know, playing the middle infield is better than having a guy, you know, Escobar is basically a third baseman at this point, at this day and age. So I would rather have Andrelton Simmons than Yunel Escobar, and I think Andrelton Simmons is going to get picked up in a ton of leagues tonight now that we have this rash of different injuries to various shortstops around the league.
Yeah, I don't the power for Andrelton is the biggest thing, and I remember him hitting WBC home runs when he played for the Netherlands last time around. But you look at the year, like I said, I believe it was 2013, where he hit the 17 home runs. That was off of a 39% fly ball rate. And we're talking about a guy with a home run to fly ball rate career-wise of 6%. And if I remember that year, it wasn't over 10. Like, and I understand he had a large denominator because of the amount of fly balls that he hit. But I don't think, like, if I set the over-under at 10.5, there's no way in hell I could take the over and feel good about myself. Am I wrong? Chuck, would you like to take 11 home runs for Andrelton Simmons, being that he's got, I think, one in the bank already?
I would not, but if you told me that he was going to hit 7 home runs and steal 14 bases and hit over 275, I would say that that has a ton of value as a replacement for players that are going down for injury. And so, I'm in agreement with you that I would take the under on 10.5 home runs. But at the same time, if he moves up to fifth, he shows some improvement. I like some performance spikes. Last week on the podcast, I said, Jay Bruce, maybe, we've given up too early on him. He's only 30 compared to Curtis Granderson being 35. And Bruce, blasted some home runs since then. So I think we're prone to not giving players time to develop anymore because we have them entering the league at so much of a younger age. And I do not think that we should give up on Andrelton Simmons yet. So I'm in agreement with you, but I think I might even be a little more positive on him than you are, and way more positive than Ben. But that's because Ben lives on the East Coast, and East Coast people are persnickety and pessimistic, and they snipe at each other all the time, and they rob each other on the subways. So that's basically my theory.
Hey, Ben, that's all true, by the way. But one thing, we didn't get your Escobar thoughts, and a stat that I had left out was he's not a guy that gets shifted often, but teams tried last year, and he hit 400 against the shift. Do you have any Escobar thoughts or likes, dislikes, anything?
He is a bonehead. I'll give him that. I have no issues with him. He's who he reminds me. He's kind of like a Miguel Prado. Martin Prado.
I was going to say, the dude from Dexter? And yeah. Is it because they both played on the Braves?
They're more empty batting average guys. They don't have a ton of counting stats, but they'll contribute. But they're more empty batting average guys than anything else. Now, that's fine and dandy if that's what you – if you need something like that. If you need someone who's going to be able to give you consistent at-bats from year to year or even throughout the entire season, if you need someone who's going to be there game in and game out, going to give you a good batting average, he's going to chip in the occasional run, going to chip in the occasional RBI, not much in terms of stolen bases or in terms of home runs, but he'll give you something. And in a deep league, at-bats are gold. And we've talked about this before. I brought this up, I believe, on last week's podcast. If you have someone who has at-bats and you're in a real deep league, you can't be unhappy about it. Yeah, you may not be happy if they're not good at bats, but Yunel Escobar is not going to give you a ton of bad at bats, which is one of the nice things about Yunel Escobar. So I do like him. And Chuck, not everyone gets robbed on the subway. All right, just got to put it out there.
So Yunel Escobar is 8% owned in ESPN leagues, and a guy like Jung Ho Kang is 15.5%. You look at a guy like Danny Valencia, who's 12.3%. I don't know how you feel about either of those guys compared to that. Hey, Eugenio Suarez owning 33.6% leagues. Get the fuck out of here. Like, that just irritates me.
Sir, your language is appalling.
I gotta earn us that explicit rating. I've decided that that's the only reason you guys keep me around the podcast anymore.
Justin,
if I'm lying,
Justin does ask us to take pity on you, so...
Hey, that's all right. Real quick, and I know this has nothing to do with Angels, but can I have my ADD moment while I'm thinking about ownership percentages?
Just go ahead.
Awesome. Why is Lance Lynn underowned? He's 49% owned in Yahoo and less than 25% in ESPN leagues. He had a pretty good start against the Cubs last week, who kind of went off the rails. He didn't quite reach the six innings for a quality start, didn't get the win, even though he was in line for one until the bullpen exploded. Any Lance Lynn thoughts on my ADD moment of the week?
I really like Lance Lynn. I'm hoping that he is able to come back. I still think that he has top 40 upside if he's able to pitch well. I just don't know how many innings he's going to get on that arm this year.
I prefer Waka to Lynn. I still think the...
Ew.
I prefer Waka a lot to Lynn. So if you guys want to do some sort of a bet on Waka versus Lynn the rest of the season, I will take Waka in a landslide, and thank you for that.
Yeah,
and
in my Waka, ADD, if Waka is better than Evan has to leave the podcast, if Lynn is better, Chuck has to leave the podcast. That seems like a win.
No,
win-win for you, Ben. That's for sure.
Man, hey, I'm hilarious.
How about this? If Chuck wins, Ben has to sing "Like a Virgin," and if I win, then he has to sing "Holiday."
What? No, that's
all you guys do in Jersey is karaoke Madonna, right?
No.
It's
also part of Pennsylvania.
In my ADD moment, I would like to mention that Evan somehow came across this idea of comparing Young Ho Gong to Yunel Escobar, which makes me think that the two of them should get together for like a 2-week drinking binge, and we should see if we could start a race war that would probably never end since they're both really bad people.
Well, man, you just made me think of South Park.
Ouch. Yeah, definitely. And the thing is, Jungle Gong wouldn't make it through a 2-week drinking binge. He'd be arrested after 2 days. So
he'd be arrested after 12 hours. I don't know why you're giving him that much credit.
I know. I was trying to make it fun.
He's not even allowed in. He's not even going to play. They're not going to give him a visa, so it doesn't matter.
He's not going to play. If you're one of the 15% owners that have Jungle Gong and you're not in AL, like, there's no
I would assume it's probably dead ownership. Chuck, why don't we move on to you? You have a couple of players to talk about, and then we'll wrap it up with me.
I want to talk about one, Manuel Margot, who is just 22 years old. He's hitting .286 on the season. He's got 4 runs and 4 RBIs. He was basically drafted as a stolen base afterthought because he has obvious 30-plus steal potential, and he has 2 home runs already. And I looked back at his Fangraphs page, etc., and saw that he is not a zero in home runs. Hasn't been in the minors anyway, and he did have double-digit steals in 2014. And I just want to say that when a player is still coming into his mid-20s, we do not really know exactly how much power might develop. And Manuel Margot, to me, is I think the sky is the limit. I would prospect on him in dynasty leagues. I would buy into him anywhere that I could. And if somebody wants to sell off his hot start, I would take a chance on it, because I do not see anyone in that organization standing in his way of playing time and development. And I love these high floor guys, because if he plays a lot, he's obviously going to steal bases, and then he's not going to hurt you, and everything else is pure gravy train. So I'm all over Manuel Margot. If you're in a shallow enough league that he's available, or if there's someone that is trying to sell off on him, I would jump on him very, very fast. What do you think, Kevin?
I mean, I don't have insane Margot thoughts other than the fact that who knows how long Alex Dickerson is going to be out with his injury issues. I was actually going to pepper you with some names for a Would You Rather if you wanted to play along with me, Chuck.
We can do that. We'll just pretend like Ben isn't here.
Well, no, that's okay. We'll go back and forth. So here we go. Manuel Margot or Max Kepler, Chuck?
Manuel Margot, not close.
All right. Margot or Jason Hayward? Ben?
Margot.
Domingo Santana, just because you're a Brewers fan, Chuck?
I'm not a Domingo Santana guy. Margot, not close.
Okay. So I'm moving the wrong way down the ESPN. Go in the wrong way. Yosemite Tomas or Margot? Totally different skill sets.
Tomas.
I will go with Tomas as well.
Okay. Inciarte?
I don't see why anybody would want Inciarte instead. Inciarte is a good player, but he's obviously a zero in the power categories. And he also plays in a lineup where he doesn't have much of a chance to move down the lineup at all, ever. So I would say Margot. Margot's a lot younger, and I would much, much, much prefer Margot.
I feel it depends on what you need specifically. I feel that Inciarte is more likely to have a better batting average that's more consistent throughout the year, and he's more likely to have a better basis of runs. So if you need a solid batting average and runs, and you want, you know, 20-ish plus steals, then yeah, that's the way to go. If you're looking for pure speed upside and to get some power out of it, then you go Margot.
All right. My last two names were going to be Brett Gardner and Keon Broxton. And these are all guys that are roughly owned in between like 65 and 35% of ESPN standard leagues.
Go Margot over Gardner, Broxton over Margot.
You're crazy. Brett Gardner is insane. 5 stolen bases already.
Yeah, but he'll finish the year at 20.
I'll take the over. Thank you.
All right. That's fine. You can. You'll lose.
I will take Margot over Gardner, and I would take Margot over Keon Broxton right now. I think Broxton already had the nasal fracture. I also think that the way this is playing out in Milwaukee right now, the way that Aguilar is playing really well, a guy I was going to speak to, is pushing Thames to the outfield. You know, we saw Hernan Perez already in center. Kirk Nieuwenhuis, I don't know why there's a love affair there, but there seems to be, especially at home, like the broadcasters like to say. So, to me, I would rather have Margot. I think Margot's playing time is more clear, and his upside is actually higher in stolen bases and quite a bit less in power, but quite a bit more in batting average. So I'll take Margot.
All right, so why don't we move on to my last player, and that's going to be talking about Jason Worth. Jason Worth actually had a pretty good start to the season, which, you know, to be fair, I wouldn't have expected. I don't know about you guys, but I'm pretty sure Evan, like, shit on Jason Worth at the beginning of the season. Am I wrong about that, Evan?
No, you're correct for once, so continue.
For once? Sir, out of line. But no, so he's 7-21 to start the season. He's got 6 RBIs, 3 runs, 2 home runs. He's useful-ish, considering that he's owned in less than 15% of leagues, but he's basically a 4/5 outfielder type in really deep leagues. I wouldn't say that he's anything useful in anything less than a 15-team league, and I'm sure you guys would agree on that. But it's nice to see him healthy and performing well in the Nationals lineup, which has a lot of players in it that can get on base and can give him the ability to get RBIs. And if he gets home runs to go with it, that would be nice. Especially if he's able to stay healthy, that will help keep his batting average up. What are your guys' thoughts on this?
I mean, his batting average was in the tank the previous 2 years. You're looking at 244 in 2016 and 221 in 2015. You were right. I pooped on Jason Worth. And just because he hit 2 home runs and 23 plate appearances, I'm supposed to do cartwheels and admit that I was wrong? No. Like, that's not going to happen. I still think there's a lot of injury concern. I agree that if you're looking at, you know, lineup construct and whatnot, like, the counting numbers are going to be there for him, absolutely. But I just don't know how much I love the skill set. I love the surroundings, which may bump him up over some names, you know, as like a tiebreaker. But I'm not going out of my way to acquire Jason Worth.
What about you, Chuck?
I would say that he makes a really good roster patch right now while he's both healthy and playing well. You know, he offers a little bit of everything. He's smart enough and still quick enough that he can throw in a base or two. I do believe that that lineup is peaking a little bit right now and could get even hotter because Not everyone is there yet, but they're getting extra stuff from Ryan Zimmerman right now than they thought they were getting. Getting a little bit from Stephen Drew, et cetera, and so forth. Matt Wieters has gotten off to a good start with his new team. So Jason Wirth is a guy. Contract was considered an albatross. I think the contract has gone about as good as they could have hoped for when they originally inked it, since the baseball world was basically completely taken aback by the contract. And I sort of always root for him because he seems to be the kind of player that tries to gut it out and tries to do everything he can. So I think I have no qualms or false ideas in my head that he's a guy that you want, thinking you're going to get a full year of production out of. But wow, he's a great roster patch right now. All my injuries on my teams, which are many, seem to be on the dirt. So I can't use an extra outfielder, but if I could, I agree with Ben that Jason Wirth is a very sound investment right now.
Well, yeah, I don't know if there's much more to add to a Jason Wirth conversation, but the name that you brought up was Ryan Zimmerman, and that was part of the last player debate that I had finished. Unless, do you have anything else to add to Jason Wirth there, Ben?
No.
Okay. I mean, not that I didn't think that you might have something intelligent to say. There's just not tons to say on Jason Wirth.
He's got a nice flow, bro.
Yeah, that beard, though.
That beard looks like you, dude.
Man, I trim my stuff, and, you know, I'm looking a little sexier, but I do crazy stuff like...
Oh, my God.
Oh, stop. My old Skype picture where I had the hair like Tobias Beecher from season 2 of Oz was one of the greatest things in the world. I'll have to tweet that out later. Anyways, you guys have no idea what I'm talking about. So Ryan Zimmerman, let's talk about important things. I wanted to compare him versus Mark Reynolds, and I wanted to do it in an average league, not an OBP, because I believe Reynolds obviously gets the bump there due to the walk rate. However, even in a year when Ryan Zimmerman hit .218 with an OBP under .275 last year, he still popped 15 homers and scored 60 runs. So when we're talking about lineup constructs of the Nationals, they can make a guy that everybody's forgotten about in Ryan Zimmerman productive. And the strikeout issues are still there. He's got 7 and 23 plate appearances. This was when I was doing my research this afternoon. And I know we're dealing, once again, with a week of sample sizes, but he's making contact on less than 70% of pitches. He's swinging at inside the strike zone and swinging at 34% of pitches outside the strike zone, which are not great. And there's the injury monster looming over him. So if you were talking about a utility spot for the rest of the year, would you rather have Ryan Zimmerman or Jason Wirth?
Jason Wirth.
Oh, boy. That's tough because I think they're pretty similar players overall. I guess I think there's a little more power upside because of past power outbursts from Ryan Zimmerman. But I trust him less to stay healthy, if that's even possible. I would flip a coin, but my gut would tell me that Ryan Zimmerman has more upside and Jason Wirth is safer.
Yeah. And not to, you know, completely, like I said, I tease this as Mark Reynolds versus Ryan Zimmerman. Reynolds is a hot name early. Not that he needs Colorado for his power to play, but I think it helped him in another arena while I was doing some research. I want to take a quick second and read his batting average against righties the previous six seasons before coming to Colorado. So going backwards, starting in 2015, he hit against righties .233, .204, .218, .219, .225, and .191. And last year he hit .297. And he posted a .947 OPS at Coors against righties compared to a .792 against the road. Now, I realize that was a lot of numbers, but he was really good against right-hand pitching last year. There could be a bit of random variance in there, you know, slicing down splits. And his 25.6% strikeout rate against righties last year was actually his career best in that department. Believe it or not, but it's something to see on the stat sheet. So if I posed Mark Reynolds versus Ryan Zimmerman, where would you guys be for a utility spot?
I personally would be all over Ryan Zimmerman in that comparison, because I think when Ian Desmond comes back, as good as Gerardo Parra is playing, I think playing time will be few and far between for Mark Reynolds, who's also, you know, an aging player that was signed as like a non-tendered contract towards the, you know, towards when spring training started. So to me, I think it, for me, it's pretty clear that I would much rather have Zimmerman than Mark Reynolds.
Ben, what do you think?
I agree. I would rather Zimmerman as well, just because I don't really know what's going to happen. If I had guaranteed that Reynolds was going to have more playing time, or like, you know, if I knew that both were getting the same amount of the bats, like say 350 to 400 bats for the year, I may consider Reynolds, but still think right. that Zimmerman has more upside in this particular situation.
So, you know, I mean, there was a lot of talk this offseason about the possibility of Colorado moving an outfielder, you know, Blackman, Carlos Gonzalez, you know, once David Dahl comes back, they've got some extra depth, and you don't think that they might look at trading an outfielder to clear up room to move Desmond to the outfield and play Reynolds on a more consistent basis?
All right, Evan, now you did it. Now you hit my key button, okay? The Rockies have no plan whatsoever. All they do is add outfielders. Okay. That is what they do. They, you know, they traded one outfielder for one relief pitcher, Corey Dickerson, for a guy, you know, Jake McGee. Other than that, everyone says every year they're going to trade Cargo. They're going to trade this guy. They stack up outfielders.
It could happen, man.
Like Cordwood. They stack up outfielders like Cordwood. Speaking of the Rockies and a plan and any idea of what they might do with outfielders besides acquiring three or four more that they can't play all the time, to me, is pure foolishness. So I'm sick of it. It's the same story. You remember before Tulowitzki got traded, it was Cargo, Cargo, Cargo's got to go. Now, this last offseason, anybody was going to go, and none of them went. That doesn't happen.
I think that's a lot of people either A, wanting to ship off Cargo because of injury concerns, B, getting rid of Blackman because they didn't believe the growth that he showed last year. So I think there was justification for those trade talks. And I agree, there's a Sigmund Bloom, who's a big fantasy football guy, likes to talk about the theory of rational coaching, where, yeah, if the Rockies did what we all know that they should do, like, things would go a certain way, but they just don't. Like, you can't expect people to do the right thing all the time, and that's definitely what you said. I'm just saying, it's the Angels in the Outfield episode. It could happen, Chuck.
There was no reason to acquire Parra last year. There was no clear fit for Ian Desmond on the team this year. They're going to act completely irrationally, and now, even if David Dahl does rip up the minors or what have you, now they have to deal with the fact that Ian Desmond has played very little first base. He obviously needs to play for what they signed him for. Parra is suddenly the player that they wanted him to be when they signed him last year. They're going to have six or seven outfielders on their roster, and they're going to be misusing them because of their own crazy ineptitudes. So there you go. That's my rant.
All right, so do you guys have anything else to add?
Nope, killing it right there.
All right, so why don't we wrap this up? Evan, why don't you give our listeners your Twitter handle and tell them what you're working on?
EVFWFB, EVFWFB, so easy, rolls right off the tongue. What am I working on? I'm already working on ways to torment you for next week, and I want to go watch some baseball. So have a good night, and that was a fantastic conversation, guys. Thank you.
All right, well, thanks, Evan. Chuck, why don't you tell our listeners where you can be reached and what you're working on?
I can be reached at Just Chucking It on Twitter. I'm holding out. Maybe I'll figure out how to put FWFB on there one of these days. Anyway, other than that, I'm just working on trying to figure out what sort of a weekly column I can get put up at FWFB that maybe helps nudge us along as far as getting some current events or some trendy kind of content, as well as all of the analytics and stuff that are added through the other contributors. So other than that, I'm just enjoying my time doing two podcasts a week. And you guys are a lot of fun to talk to. And it just helps the conversation and gives people stuff to listen to, which I know I always looked for before I was a podcaster. So I think it's good stuff.
Thank you, Chuck. I'm at BBrandsFWFB. I'm currently hosting our Friends with Fantasy Benefits basketball podcast, so give that a listen as the season's currently wrapping up. We're going to be doing some we're going to be finishing our Dynasty League ranks, and we're going to be looking into the upcoming draft class for that. I will be writing some baseball articles this year as the season goes on. Don't forget to give us a rate and review on whatever platform that you are listening to us on. It's always very much appreciated. And as the baseball season continues, I'm going to be looking forward to just watching as much baseball as I can. I'm just glad it's back. So from the rest of us at Friends with Fantasy Benefits, have a great baseball season, everyone.